Okay, we're back in the Court Crash Course of Jewish Lifestyle, and we're absolutely towards the end now. And the topic today is the Year of Avelos. We've moved away from the funeral now into the Year of Avelos. What we're going to do is this is the focus on from the Shiva to the Shoshin to the Yud Beis Chodesh. Then we're going to move into, hopefully next time we'll just learn to go to Yahrzeit and Matzev, and then we're basically wrapping it up. So it's so the end of the full life cycle. We're going to just take a moment to thank, first of all, Sri Stern, who's sponsoring the entire series. And today, we also want to thank Ed and Sandy, who are sponsoring today's share, Lila Nishmas Shirley class, Sonia Asara Fager, Bas Moshe on his 17th Yahrzeit. Be'ezras Hashem, she shows so much to be proud of in the last 17 years. How many additional family members have been added to the Klar and Beyond clan? And Be'ezras Hashem, there should be many more in the next 17 years as well. Please take a moment to say a bracha, Lila Nishmas, just outside. We also are learning today, Lila Nishmas, we want to thank Jack and Barbara Siegel, who are sponsoring for Barbara's mother, who your Mrs. Frieda Bas Avram Moshe Aleh Shalom, whose Yahrzeit is tomorrow, and also for Lior Devora Bas Shlomo, that is Barbara's and Jack's great grandniece, whose Yahrzeit is on the 20th of Sivan. Nishmasa Eden. Limud should be really truly aliyas neshama for all of them. So let us learn a little bit of Torah. So here is, I'll tell you, this is the most interesting thing. This is the most unlearned part of halacha, because what happens like this is, unfortunately, when we talk about the Shiva, a lot of times people are focused on, you know, death and the funeral, and there's a lot of time spent on that, because there's a lot of energy put to that, and people sort of just fall into the Shiva. There's no time to really talk to people about the Shiva, because Shiva is so hectic, it's so busy, and people just sort of assume they know about the Shiva, and a lot of times people don't actually know about the Shiva. So this is actually the origin of this entire thing, of the what I try to do here, or these FAS, these frequently asked shailas, is I actually print these out, and I give this to people before the funeral, to the spouse, usually. Because then I allow the spouse to read through what to expect, because there's a lot of questions that come up that people aren't aware of. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the Shiva, move to the Shloshim and the Shana, and then hopefully, Be'ez Hashem, we should never have to use this. We should never be in such a place. But it is important to know this, because most of the time it isn't addressed. So the first thing is the first meal. So we all know this thing that people bring meals, right? And that's really amazing, and it's wonderful, and our neighbors and our community are amazing. But there's actually a halachic aspect to that, and that is that the first meal is what's called the Sudas Havra'ah, right? This meal is provided by somebody else, not family, not oneself, not one's pantry, not one's fridge. Somebody else has to provide this meal as well. And that meal is the first meal which is eaten when coming back from the cemetery. So standing practice in our shul is one of the divisions of our Chevra Kadisha is to order such a meal, right? So to make sure that a meal is delivered, and we have a standing meal, ordered one of the local stores, and we send that meal to make sure that by the time the family is coming back from the cemetery, this meal is there as well. And there are a number of reasons for this meal. So the first is that simply, Avelim in general don't have time to look after themselves. There's so much else going on that a lot of times people won't eat enough. People won't think far ahead enough, because they're just so enveloped in the experience. So this is a way of the community saying, we will take care of you. Now, Baruch Hashem, it should continue for the rest of the Shiva. People should do meals all the time. And that's a wonderful thing. But halachically speaking, the community is obligated to do this, number one. But number two is also, there's, I think, a really profound idea, which I've noticed in the Geshe Achaim, Rav Yechiel Tukhachinsky points out, is that there's this Kabbalistic notion, what's called Nama de Kisufa. Nama de Kisufa means bread of embarrassment. What does that mean? That means is that we all feel the shame of accepting gifts. None of us like gifts, right? So it is nice to get a gift at the beginning, but then we actually prefer the things that we earned, right? The things that, let's say we spent a lot of time in investing and then we got it, we feel good about that, right? So, and we have a natural shame of somebody giving us something which we should have provided for ourselves, right? So if it's something we couldn't provide for ourselves, thank you very much. But if it's something we could have and should have, then we feel embarrassed. And so the part of what is described as a form of punishment in the world to come is that when a person gets to the other side and they didn't earn the infinite energy that they are deserving, right? So they're going to come to bask in the infinite light by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The finite will now be, so to speak, expanded and gain this infinite pleasure of being in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then, if we didn't earn it, we're going to come out there and we didn't pedal hard enough and we're getting what we should have got, but we didn't deserve it. That's what's called Nama de Kisufa. It's eternal embarrassment of wasting a life, not getting there. So what happens is that where the people are left behind receive a meal, a handout from somebody else, as a reminder, you have work to do still, right? Don't get to the end without having completed your tafkid, not to get the handout. That's sort of a little reminder around the time of death as well. Chayyara, question? No question? No, okay. Okay, yeah. So anyway, it's what most people don't know is that it's actually so important you can't eat another meal. The Avelim are not allowed, halachically speaking, to eat another meal before receiving this, which means that the Chevra Kedusha needs to do their job. It's a criminal responsibility. They're allowed to take a snack. You can grab a coffee on the way back, but you shouldn't have a meal before having this first meal as well. And it is the times that it's skipped is on a Erev Shabbos after Chatzos or on Chol HaMoed. Other minor holidays, it's still there. So let's say it's a Rosh Chodesh, there's still a sort of Savra, even though the funeral is contracted. But when it comes to, it's only on Erev Shabbos and on Chol HaMoed when the Sudas of Ra is skipped as well. And of course, on a fast day, right. So then that would be, yes. That's right. The hottest Yud Zayin B'Tammuz was in the year. So then it would be skipped. Now, the other thing is again, this is a piece at the beginning of the Shema that needs to be taken care of is mirrors. So we actually have a few wonderful women who volunteer to help other people cover the mirrors in the house. Some people take it privately and say, it's my house, I want to take care of it. Some people have big houses and there's a lot of other things going on and they're trying to get all the pieces together. And so we need help. So we have people come in and try to help cover the mirrors. And so just to understand a little bit of why this is. The first is for self-care, meaning to say, so the mirror is the place we look to groom, to make sure everything's in place, make sure we're looking just great. And Shiva's not a time to look just great, right? So it's not a time to feel grand and great. That's part of it as well. There also is an aspect of is the mirror is something which does or also is a vehicle towards intimacy, and intimacy is not allowed during Shiva. That's another piece of it as well. But there are other aspects of this, which is, for instance, there's a lot of times a minyan in a Beis Avel. If there's a minyan in a Beis Avel, you're not allowed to daven in front of the mirrors. We'll call another aspect of this as well. If that would be the only reason, then you would really need to cover the pictures and the mirrors, right? So, because you're not allowed to daven in front of pictures as well. It's always interesting to, I've had this experience at so many Bate Avel, like all kinds of beautiful artwork, but it's like, you're not supposed to be davening in front of pictures, right? Certainly not forms of human beings or animals, or, you gotta be careful about where you're davening, so check your eastern walls. These are things to be aware of. But the third one, which is I think is fascinating, is it comes down to a halacha, what's called Kfiya Samita. Kfiya Samita is, and we get to it, is the way it used to be symbolized that Avelus would begin, is that turn over the beds. Now remember, when you're living in a one-bedroom house, right? Like, and that's the reality of what most of humanity was living in for most time. The bed would be the place you sleep and eat and sit and, right, all those things. So when Avelus began, they would flip their bed over and there would be no bed to sit on, right? There would be no couch to sit on. Yeah, we were trying to figure out, how many dens do we have? But in those days, that was it. It was the bed, right? So they flipped the bed. And part of that was because of what's called the idea of overturning the human form, right? So the idea of where the human being resides, rests, is we're flipping it over because the death is a time where we're reminded that the human form did not live up to its calling. We weren't doing what we should have. It wasn't life. We have a lot more to do on this earth. And death is a time of we remember how futile it is to sometimes be alive or how little we're doing around here. And so we flip over the human form in a sense. And so the mirror covering also is an element of covering the human form because we're embarrassed. We're embarrassed to say, this is what a human is because we have so much more to, the calling is higher. So this is all part of the mirror covering as well. A few just little pieces over here which are interesting to think about, and that is Shabbos. So oftentimes there's a Shabbos in the middle of Avelos. Technically speaking, the mirror should be uncovered so that there isn't a public display of Avelos. A public means that people walk into your house and say, wow, ooh, what's, oh, right. So that's not good. And then a lot of times you'll have where the base avil is one place and the avelim are traveling back and forth because they're sleeping at home. In that case, what do they do in their own home? I know many poskim can say, no worries, don't do anything. But the practice that I recommend is to cover the ones in the master bathroom. So let's say somebody's sleeping at home, traveling to the base of avil, cover the ones that they would see in the morning when they get up in the morning, right? And the rest of the house, you don't do the whole house. It's like 13 mirrors, just one in the master bathroom is enough. And then go to the base of avil, which is where everybody's sitting, and that's where everything's covered. And then come home in the evening, and that'd be the sufficient as well. So I also break front mirrors don't need to be covered. Nobody's examining themselves in the break front mirrors, but it's like the ones that are on the wall that people would walk past and notice themselves as well. Okay, so that's one aspect. The reason I put this first is because this is something which needs to be done first, right? So this has to be done pre-starting the shiva as well. Similarly, the next thing that needs to be done as a prerequisite is low chairs as well. Now, it's not about low chairs. If you look at the halacha and you look at the gemara and so on, you'll actually see the halacha is you don't sit on chairs. There's kfiya sameta, which means you sit on the floor. And if you've been to some bate alva, you'll notice some people actually sit on the floor. That is the practice. That is the standard practice. Okay, so now it turns out that we are a little mifunakim, which means that we're not so accustomed to doing things like that, and our backs don't always allow us to do those kind of things, and our hips don't allow us to stand up that easily anymore, just from the ground. So we have what we're called avelus deluxe, right? So which is these chairs. And now I'm not saying that the chairs are comfortable in any way whatsoever, but it happens to be that is an upgrade from what's talked about at the times of the Gemara. It seems that this halacha, so to speak, the minhag has trended a little upwards, but the halacha is it should be ones within 3 tvachim of the ground, generally speaking. 3 tvachim is around 10 inches, so we try to make it that the chair is lower. And if a person is not able to, sometimes you have elderly people who are sitting shiva and they simply are not able to, they are allowed to, if it's not possible for them to sit lower, to sit on a regular chair. If it is possible, but one can't do those chairs, one can take the pillows off the couch and sit on the couch in such a way, kind of like Tisha B'Av as well. So one has to sort of know that balance. When it comes to eating, one can eat regularly. When it comes to sleeping, one can sleep regularly. One does not need to remove one of the mattresses from one's bed to do this, or one of the pillows as well, but one can sleep as well regularly. Yeah.
When it comes to eating, you can go and sit at a regular...
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Regular, sit at the regular kitchen table as well. Yes. Yeah, sometimes, and I would say that's technically more correct, but the practice has become this as well. Yeah.
The sitting on the floor applies both male and female.
Yep. So, but you'll notice that today most people don't. Most people sit in the lowest chairs as well. Today, people got all the tricks as well, because you put the tuna cans on the front legs, right? Better angle, right? There's a whole thing, and we've produced a whole industry of chairs, of small chairs. It's amazing that we were living in such an age and stage. But anyways, this is the general practice. So in our shul, Baruch Hashem, we have a schus of having our own chevra kadisha. We have a significant amount of shiva chairs as well. And so when it's needed, we have special people in the community who make it their business to go make deliveries and pick up the chairs and bring folding chairs. If you want to get more involved, please let me know. We have a lot of angels who do this. Generally speaking, there's usually one friend who wants to be so helpful and calls Miss Askim. And Miss Askim is a wonderful organization, but it's created for people who live in Shtiblach. Like, I have a minion here and a minion there, and I daven in a basement here, so I don't have a shul, I don't have a chevra kadisha. So I outsource what a community should be doing to somebody else who I don't know to do it for me. But that's not the way it should be done. It should be our community looking after us. If everyone's in a shul, well, a shul should have a chevra kadisha. The shul has a chevra kadisha. They take responsibility. And as people you know who are looking after you and coming into your house, not some random people, that's the way it should be. And so we should be proud to be in a community that does that as well. The main shuls do it as well. Ms. Askim is a wonderful thing for those who don't have shuls, those who have minyanim or shtiblach, whatever else it is that they use. Now halacha that most people are not aware of is tefillin for the men's side over here. Can a person wear tefillin? So during Aninus, a man doesn't wear tefillin, of course, right? Because there's no mitzvahs which are performed. What about during Shiva? So, of course, a man wears tefillin, except on the first day of Shiva. So this is why it's so interesting that when a person comes back for the funeral, a man would not wear tefillin and mincha, which would usually be, because the tefillin is a responsibility during the entire day. So let's say a person, for whatever reason, missed shachris, right? and did not put on tefillin shachris, you'll sometimes see a man at mincha putting on tefillin. You don't see it on the first day of velos, generally speaking. For some reason, the Hasidic community, this has become a... Some people do this. I don't know why. It's clearly not the halacha in the Gemara. Some sort of Kabbalistic reason later on, but this is clearly not what's said in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. And the reason is actually, a lot of these other halachas we learn from stories that occurred in Tanakh. So one of the stories that occurred in Tanakh is by Yechezkel. And Yechezkel is told that he's going to lose Machmar and Einov, he's going to lose his wife. And that is and part of that is actually a symbol. So Yechezkel experiences much of the destruction, the Avelus through the destruction personally. And as a function of that, Eddie, could you close the door? Is that right? It's just the fire alarm keeps going. What happens is that Yechezkel is told certain things that he's not allowed to do that regular Avelim would do. And because of that, we know by inference what normal Avelim would do. So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yechezkel, you are going to lose your wife and you are going to wear your tefillin, Perecha Chavu Shalecha, as an indication of the fact that Israel is going to experience terrible loss, intimate loss, and they're going to not be able to process it through Avelus, meaning that's what's going to happen to Israel. The destruction of the temple is going to be so terrible, they won't be able to process it in the way of the gift of Avelus. And so this is where we learn that a person should not wear tefillin on the first day as well. And this includes, actually, by the way, until the sunrise the next morning, which is why it's important the first day of Avelus, the Shiva Minyan should be after sunrise. Just not, it usually isn't an issue, but let's say deep winter and there's an issue of sunrise times, one has to be careful because I can't wear a tefillin until the sunrise the next day. Interesting. Halacha as well. Okay, most people are not aware of this. They just say, oh, that was the first day. But no, this is part of the uniqueness of the first day of Avelus as well. Self-care. Oh, this is the tough one here. Showering, right? So can I shower? So if you look in the Gemara, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the answer is no. Not cold, not hot. No, there's no body showers during Shiva at all. This is like Tisha B'Av, right? This is the Shiva is akin to the most intense aspect of Avelus as well. However, let's say one soils a certain area, right? So one steps in something, or one's hand is dirty, or something falls on someone. One can even use hot water and soap to spot clean that area. But one should not be doing a full body shower as well. And there is a notion. Oh, we'll get that in a second. We're going to get to Shabbos in just a second. So what about what's called istinus? So there is a notion in istinus which is called a person who's just can't bear this, right? Like, I mean, if we had a day like yesterday, like in the summer, it's like, you know, it's having a shower, just walking outside. So what about istinus? So the two qualifications of istinus to make the cut would be that a person takes a shower every day, usually, number one. And number two is they experience extreme discomfort by not showering. So there's a difference between extreme discomfort and inconvenience, right? So one has to know that the difference between those things. Some people just make it, some people are just all right. Some people just cannot handle it. And if you cannot handle it and you usually do it, then that would be a form of istinus. One should at least, in that case, skip the first day, right? So at least the first day of Avelus. Anyways, now, what about a woman going to mikveh during Shiva? So if the woman is in Avelus, she can't go to the mikveh. If the husband is in Avelus, she could go to the mikveh. Now, just understand the reason for that is intimacy is prohibited during Shiva, right? So the mikveh, so to speak, is suspended. However, if the husband's in Shiva, she may, because it's going to affect aspects of harachakos. She, in terms of they can hand each other things, they can all the things that make things a little easier during the period of post mikveh as well. What about, yeah?
Sorry, if you're in Onan at the beginning of the day,
yep.
The day of Shiva starts, let's say, the whatever time,
yep.
The Kfura. So when you're saying you shouldn't shower the first day, is that considered even in Aninus? Or?
Good question. So here's the deal. Aninus also has a prohibition of bathing. But you'll find that it appears later on, meaning clearly during Avelus, there's like showering and self-care in this respect is clearly off the table. Aninus, it appears in later parts of Halacha, as a part of self-care. And so I would say like this to somebody, if you know you cannot, there's no humanly possible way of getting through the Avelus, right, without a shower, I would say that it'd be better to do the Aninus shower as an istinus than the Avelus shower, just to, if that's to be a trade-off, okay? If that's the way to put it. Similarly, the deodorant. So you say deodorant. Why is this relevant? Because there's a notion of what's called sicha. Sicha is anointing. There's five prohibitions that appear on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, which are applied during Avelus, right? Except for the eating and drinking, of course, right? But one of them is Sicha, which is anointing oneself. So people used to take oil and put it on themselves, better smell, it's a form of cleansing as well. So that is not allowed. So what is included in that? So many of the poskim say this only relates to perfume and cologne, not to deodorant, right? A lot of times people are not putting on deodorant to smell good, they're putting on deodorant as an antiperspirant or just to be fresh, but not so the perfumes. You know, some people, it's like amazing, you can tell they're coming like half a block away, right? Because, and already half a block after you've met them, you know, that you know that you just met them. So that's not allowed, right? So you're not allowed to have the cologne or the perfume, but regular deodorant as well. Can I brush my teeth? And the answer is please. that's not considered part of the Yisrael or self-care. Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing as well. One second. What about jewelry? The answer is not during Avelos. This is a time, so to speak, of being, the self-care, the self-awareness is not as much there. What was that? No. But I mean to say things that, like, let's say something you put on for Shabbos or to feel special, right? That would not be worn. And then laundry to change clothes. So an Avel cannot wear freshly laundered clothes during the Shiva. One can switch what's called Big Day Zeya, which is undergarments, right? Anything that's touching the skin, one can switch, obviously. But one should not be doing laundry or wearing freshly laundered clothes during. So one wears out one's wardrobe, which shouldn't be too crazy as well. Jack, yeah.
But nowadays they make deodorants that are unscented.
Yeah. So sure, I mean, the poskim don't get into that. So you don't have to go there. If you're welcome, but you don't have to. There's no need to go there as well. In terms of shoes, so one cannot wear leather shoes, of course. And in those days, it used to be there were only leather shoes. So that would be mean to say people used to go unshoed. And there is a debate as to like the comfortable non-leather shoes. And this is the same debate you have on Tisha B'Av as well. The Crocs debate, you know, sometimes Crocs are more comfortable than the leather shoes in the first place. So if it's a function of comfort, then maybe I shouldn't be wearing them. Other folks are going to say it's not an issue. You'll see some Avelim just don't wear shoes. Have you ever been in a house or a base Avel where they just don't wear shoes? It might be an issue of comfort, but some Avelim actually just don't wear shoes as a function of this as well. Again, know your smells, you know, so it's important to also to be self-aware. What was that?
Did I skip makeup?
Oh.
Not that I can.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, makeup. Okay.
More women than makeup.
That is true. Thank you so much about makeup. This is a tough one. So women actually are not supposed to wear makeup for the Shloshim, the entire Shloshim, but this would exclude married women, and this will also exclude a woman in Shidduchim as well. Okay, so that takes off a significant amount of people off the table in this respect. And this applies, we'll get there again in a second. This is so to speak, so it's a time where there's a lack of self-care, a lack of looking after oneself in that way. I never noticed these things ever, like, so I don't even notice what's going on, but I know that for a lot of people this is something which is very personal, very hard, but this is sort of a way of saying that my focus is not at all me, it's one's loved one. Similarly as well, relationships between husbands and wives are not allowed during the course of Shiva, but contact, what kind of contact is allowed? So generally speaking, if it's a time the couple can actually be together, then hugging and kissing is not allowed, but any other forms of contact are fine, right? So they can hand things to each other, they can touch each other, there's no other prohibitions that exist. It's anything that is intimate or leads to intimacy is a problem during the course of Shiva as well. Then the other aspects of the art learning of Torah. So the Torah is supposed to be something which brings simcha. So you're not supposed to learn Torah during the period of Avelos. One is allowed to learn like the things one learn on Tisha B'Av. So one can learn Avelos, which is very depressing, and one can learn Yirmiyahu and Iyov and the Gemaras of the Churban. But generally speaking, one not allowed to learn Torah. Interestingly enough, there's not usually time, to be honest. There's not usually time. The only question becomes a question on Shabbos. We'll get there in a second. Tehillim, can a person say Tehillim if they're in a base Avil? The answer is, as prayer, yes, but not as an academic learning. So if a person's in the middle of learning Tehillim, it's like, wow, it's amazing, and like I saw this new thing. No, that's not. It's about actually, so to speak, saying them and davening them. Watching the news, reading the newspaper. So if one's not allowed to be learning Torah, then certainly one's not allowed to be watching the news, right? I mean, like, it should be obvious that the focus, like, if the most important, you know, so to speak, thing, which is learning ideas, is off the table, then certainly watching the news and reading one should not be distracting oneself from the focus during the period of Avelos. What about children going to school? So children should be sent to school as regular. Children do not practice Avelos in general. Again, depending on how they process things. So it depends on the age they're going through this as well. But they should go to school as regular as possible, depending on if they need a process as well. If they are the child of the deceased or the grandchild of the deceased, God forbid, then maybe that they need to have that processing as well. And are there yeah? So davening in the base Avel has a lot of its own rules. And I think Ed and Sandy actually were sponsored. What I did is I put together the guidelines for a base Avel, because there are certain basic changes in the davening which are important to be aware of. So what I did was I took the time to put together a basic format of what's skipped daily, what's added daily, and then what's done on like Rosh Chodesh and Slichos and all the different times of year. And we send that as a standard to every base Avel, so that the Avel is able to look over that. As well, we have many great tzaddikim in our shul. There's one person who has a special siddur with all the extra things we say. Don't say that, and they go through the Avel before the first davening. That's what's part of being in a great community, is people are like amazing. People really go the extra mile. I was actually in a base Avel recently, and somebody who was the president of another shul came over and says, "Hey, can you send this to me? We'd like to use this for our shul." So I was like, that's nice, you know, good to know that it counts. But that we do have that, and there's a few standard changes that happen, and how many kaddishes we say, and what extra tehillim we say, and not for now, but there's a bunch of these things that I put that together just to make sure that everybody has it as well. Greeting, most people do not know this halacha at all, is that the Avel cannot say Shalom Aleichem, you cannot say Shalom Aleichem to the Avel, right? So other greetings are allowed after the Shiva. So it's interesting, it's very hard for us, it's very hard. We are naturally social beings, we want to be there. We say, how are you? Hi, how are you? Those, one shouldn't really say that. When one goes, the best practice in the base of Avel is to come in, to look down, and to wait to be spoken to. And if the Avel decides not to speak to us, then that one just remains in such a place as well. But it shouldn't be that. How are you itself is in and of itself a complicated question, because you're not really asking that. In fact, a lot of times when a person's saying how are you, they're saying what they're trying to say is I care about you. That's what they're trying to say. The person's not okay, and you don't want them. Is all you want them to say? You want them to say, "I'm okay." They're not okay. You want them to tell you everything they're going through. You don't really, right? So that's not the right question, right? So the practice is one's not allowed to greet an avil during the avelos. One just waits for them to speak, and then one engages in the conversation as well. And in this regard as well, it's just important, like, to think about how to pay a shiva call. Maybe for another time, we should just do this properly as well. It's like, you know, I was in a base Avel last week, you know, and so I walked in, and that's what I did. I waited, and you know, sometimes the Avel will look at you and smile. You can smile, you can nod back, that's fine. But then, everybody else is like, you know, well, how did they die? Was this sudden? That's always the question. It's like, you know, like, and like, I'm like, you know, just like, you know, that's just not the, that's not. That's not, you know, and then, oh, tell me about the children, what the children up to. It's like, no. Like, so, you know, and that's even better than the weather or the other things like that. But, like, ask questions that are real questions. Like, what were the values that your spouse, that your parent, that your sibling lived for? Like, what would make them wake up in the morning, right? Tell, when did you first meet? What's your first memory of your parent? Like, real questions, right? Ask real questions, you'll get real answers, right? Oh, when was that picture from? I see that's it's a picture of the two of you together. That's so beautiful. And like, you know, so I came in, so they were busy asking about all the questions of how they died. So I asked them a question about how they lived, you know, and that was a very meaningful conversation. And then I asked about when they met, and it was beautiful. I had so many amazing lessons to learn. And then right after that, it was back to, like, you know, the kids and things like that. But it's important to the focus is supposed to be the person and how they live, not just the end. Yes.
Two questions.
No, so again, this halacha is shows you a very important thing, and that is that it's really the paying the shiva call is at the behest of the person in Avelos, which means to say, is that if the Aved does not feel like speaking, they don't have to. Now, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with that because people are visiting our house and they travel from far and they took off work, and I want to make them feel, I want to entertain them, right? Not entertain them in the entertainment, I want to make them feel welcome. So that's a lot of times the feeling we have. But technically speaking, an Aved does not need to speak to anybody. And that is certainly true with the phone call. And it drives me crazy with the phone calls because people are well-meaning with the phone calls, right? But you have 20 people in front of you. And suddenly decides, so like, there'll be another time, leave a message, right? The call is not for you. The call is for the Avel, and the Avel can't take it right now. That's fine. And some of them are very gracious. And sometimes it's another country, there's no other option we have, and we try. Maybe try after hours to see if it's possible. But it's at the behest of the Avel. The same thing, by the way, is let's say the Avel needs to have a break. They need to have a coffee break for 10 minutes. They are allowed to have a coffee break. You can step out because it's not about them. It's about you. And if they're coming for you and it's not good for you, it's all right. That's what it's supposed to be. That's how it's structured. Yeah.
What do you do? You call an Avel and they say, hi, how are you?
You're allowed to respond, yes. They shouldn't ask, but you're allowed to respond, but you shouldn't ask them. Yeah. Exactly.
Last one is, in terms of cover, if the rabbi walks in,
yep.
Do you like to stand up or not?
I'm not supposed to stand up. Avel's not supposed to stand up. It's sometimes a natural, but one naturally feels that, but one doesn't do that. Quickly, just moving on to other things. So I do want to also get a shloshim as well, if it's all right, is work. So we discussed a little bit about Ninos. An Avel is not allowed to work during this time, and most companies have bereavement time, so it's usually fine. I was not supposed to be working as well. If there's a great loss of money, then and one's the only person who can really do that, so then one may attend to that after the third day of Shiva. One can really take care of that. If it's going to lead to a great loss. Writing, it follows the same halachas of Chol HaMoed, most people are not aware of this, which is you're not allowed to write unless it's a Dabar Oved, and so texting or typing is fine on the computer. That's not writing, that's not putting pen to paper, but in terms of the actual writing, one would only be able to do it as would need it on a Chol HaMoed as well. If a doctor gets a call, doctor's on call. Usually, if one's in a group, one can often give it to another person. But oftentimes, one is called for a consult on certain things. And if one's the only one who can, one can do that if necessary, because one is the expert in that field to be able to do this. If a person has employees, can one continue to employ employees? The answer is yes, because otherwise they can take their paycheck and they're going to not work, which is a great loss, right? So that's considered a loss if one's paying someone and they're not working. So one is allowed to carry on having them do their desk jobs, right? That one is employing them to do and pay because one's paying them as well. What about if there's like natural increase? So let's say one's in real estate, one has investments on the stock market and they're going up, hopefully trending upwards. Does one need to do anything? The answer is no, because generally speaking, if something is in motion, right, one can carry on letting it be in motion and getting the proceeds. If one's a business owner, technically speaking, it is best to sell one's business for the period of Shiva if one's a business owner, right? So one is in the bereavement time, so one should sell it to a partner or manager for that time, so the profits, minus, of course, you know, all the costs of expenses of running that business for those whatever 6 days are going to be going to them as well. I have the document for that as well. If anybody's ever interested, if one's a business owner, anyone knows if somebody needs to drink aninus, it's possible to do it. And household chores are not considered work, so an Avel could and should do those as well and help out as is possible in this respect. Food-wise, I'm sure we've all heard this thing: we shouldn't take food out of the Shiva house, right? And it's always so difficult because there's so much food in the Shiva house, right? So like, what does one do? So the general custom actually is because of ruach ra. That's what it's described as, like, as a, so to speak, a negative spirit over here, which is in the Beis HaAvel. And leftover food, which is brought in after death, may be taken out. So there are many, many loopholes for this, which means to say is that some would say that the reason for this practice is it's the food that was in the house when the person died there. Right, the ruach rai. So if one brings in 20 truckloads of food afterwards, that's not even part of that. And certainly, if it's going to go to waste, which is an isra d'oraisa of Baal Tashchis for no reason, then and the food was brought in afterwards, one can certainly make sure that it's not going to go to waste. And people are so caring, and they bring these like unbelievable platters, and there's 2 avelim, and there's 30 bagels, and it's like, what are you going to do? Yes, you're allowed to give them to other people because that is the case. That would be Baal Tashkas in this case as well. If one is, let's say, and sometimes in the Sephardic about Te'el especially, they want you to say bracha since they have a, you know, they have things to say and it's beautiful. But then the point is say the bracha in the Beis Avel, right? So have the coffee, say the bracha le'ili nishmas, and then have the coffee there. But don't take it on the run, have it on the, that would be the proper way to do it. Now, travel, okay, so what about going out? So generally speaking, one of the halachas of Avelos is one is not supposed to leave the Beis Avel, right? One's supposed to stay there the whole time, one's cocooned in for the entire week as well, except if the travel is necessary, right? So for instance, let's say one lives elsewhere. One can go backwards and forwards, but one should be accompanied. The Gemara tells us that it's a time when that the one of the four people who need shmira is an avel. It's a time of din on the family and those who are left behind. So if it's a time of din, we make sure that the person is accompanied when they are going somewhere else. And an Uber driver is fine for in that respect. But it shouldn't be that a person is driving by oneself during the shiva. One should not be taking walks as well. This is sometimes hard because I remember somebody just recently, for her, just the walk, going out to walk around the block would be the way of processing things, but that's not the time to, not during the shiva. One can walk around the backyard, one can go on the porch, but not walking around outside generally. What about Shabbos? So Shabbos has a lot of things. Norby, you were mentioning this beforehand. So what am I allowed to do on Shabbos? So when Shabbos comes, what happens is that the general rule is the Dvarim Shebefarhesia, all the public aspects of Avelos lift. And the private aspects of Avelos remain in place. So private aspects of Avelos include intimacy, include showering, and include learning the Torah. So these are the things that were, so to speak, no one else is aware of. These are private things, right? No one else is necessarily aware of. They remain in place even on Erev Shabbos as well. Now, I know that there are rabbis who say it's fine for Erev Shabbos shower. That's not what it says in Halacha. What it does say in Halacha is if a person is an Istinus, they're allowed to shower. But that's not about Erev Shabbos. That's about in general, right? So if one qualifies as an Istinus, one showers every day and one feels exceptionally uncomfortable but not having showered, one can take a shower. But that's not an Erev Shabbos halacha. That's a halacha of Istinus. Okay? And then similarly as well, so when do these actually come into effect? So when does, so to speak, the aura of Shabbos hit? So there are different opinions in halacha as to when this begins. Some say it is at Mincha Katana, which is two and a half halachic hours before Shabbos. I know that Rav Atalam used to advise. And some would say Plaga Mincha, and some would even say Mizmor Shir Liyama Shabbos, which is when the person will walk into shul. That's not the practice that we have. But that would be the time that the Avel may, so to speak, lift all the public aspects of Avelos. Lift the public aspects of Avelos means change their shirt, change their shoes, change their clothes, put on their big day Shabbos, sit regular. All those things come into effect at that point in time throughout the course of Shabbos, so one is not in a different place as well when it comes to Shabbos as well. When it comes to Erev Shabbos, a Avel does not, comes to Shul, would step out for the Kabbalah Shabbos, the extra part we call the new part of Davening that was added 500 years ago, which is in Sfat, the Kabbalah Shabbos, and those six Mizmorim and the Nachah Doidi. And then they'll come in afterwards and be greeted, and as I pointed out in the shiur we did a few weeks ago, that indicates that clearly that part of davening should be done before the sun sets, which is not the way we do it in shul in general today for regular Zman Shabbos, but it should have been before. That's why you can still greet them with the Nichumim as well. What about Zmiros at the Shabbos table? The answer is Shabbos table should look regular. So if you sing Zmiros, you should sing Zmiros. If you don't sing Zmiros, you shouldn't sing Zmiros. Right, so it shouldn't be that the Shabbos is more, but it is an important thing is to do what's regular, and if one's not doing zeros in general, it's a good idea to do. Do I give brachos to my children? This is a sad part. Is no brachos during the course of shiva as well. Jewelry on Shabbos. So jewelry may be worn on Shabbos as well, and some people often ask the question: So should I make a minyan on Erev Shabbos, like a minyan in Mincha? One can, there's nothing against it, but one doesn't need to. Because if, let's say, the Avelos lifts, two, 3 hours before Shabbos, and then one's going to shul, one can daven for the Amid at shul, daven in shul, and it's not required to make a minyan on Erev Shabbos. Some people feel strongly they want to, it's fine, but just it's not necessary as well. And similarly, yeah.
With the Avel, the Gazan?
Yes. A person who's in shiva has kedimah to anybody. Is sure, absolutely. So I could give it to anybody, your side, anything. They're the highest level of chiyuv. So that would absolutely take the that's generally what we do in Israel. Talabam would recommend in our shul as well. And the same thing on Motzei Shabbos as well. Sometimes we'll see people are like really into making sure there's a minyan on Motzei Shabbos. It's not always so easy, and it's a lot of stress. Because you need to make sure the neighbors are there, and what time is it, and where are they, and is there enough people? And it's like, it's not necessary, because the Avedos only really kicks in after Havdalah, right? So if that's the case, come to shul, daven, come home, say Havdalah like a mensch, and then switch clothes, switch shoes, sit low as well. Now, a lot of times it's important that most people don't know this, is that, let's say that people are taking visitors on a Friday afternoon to 1:30, 2, 2:30, whatever it is. If the Avedos is still in effect until, let's say, 6, 7 o'clock, whatever time, you know, before their Shabbos, then they still need to sit low and they still need to wear their non-leather shoes and their shirt up to that point, right? It's just that they might not be accepting visitors at that point, but the Avedos is still in that respect as well.
We used to say Mincha and the Mincha on Shabbos at the Avel's house because of
the Torah. That's a practice which unfortunately we've lost a little bit, and some people are very makbed, is you can't move a Torah just on a whim. So one of the things that just talked about halacha is you can only move a Torah if you're going to lay it on it with it three times. So if you're in a Beis Avel, you have a Monday and a Thursday, and then you're missing one, so people do in the Beis Avel the Mincha. Today we're less makbed on that in general, but that speaks to that minhag as well. And
getting up from the Shiva for Kosav Yantav. Friday you can't wash, really, you said, because the Avelos isn't over. But what time does it finish if it's the Erev Yontav and it's your Avelos?
Good question. Good question. So if the festival is going to be cutting we had Shavuos a week and a half ago. So if there's a festival, then it really goes up till about Plaga Mincha time. So very, very close to Yontav. So that because that the shiva really goes up to that point, at which point it cuts it, and then one can take a hot shower because one is actually in shloshim then, right? So and preparing for Yom Tov itself. Other practices just to be aware of is one shouldn't greet each other. So like I hate this. I'm sitting in the base of, I'm trying to listen to the person. Somebody else is like schmoozing to me, like schmoozing at me. I don't want to say with me, but at me. You know, it's like that's not the time for that. It's like we didn't come here to socialize. I came here to spend time with the Avel, right? So one shouldn't be greeting. One's not allowed to greet or shake hands in the Beis Avel. There's a focus on the person. Shiva ending. So the Shiva is concluded. It's interesting. The Shiva is calculated from the time of burial, not the time of death. So that means to say that the burial is let's say takes place on a Monday. The Shiva is going to end on a Sunday. The burial takes place on a Sunday, it's going to end on a Shabbos morning, right? So, and that means to say is that we have what's called Mixas Yom Kekula, which works on both ends. So if the funeral is in the afternoon, the Avedim come home and they sit a few hours, sometimes a few minutes, and that's the first day. And then on the last day, it's also only until the time that Shachris is finished in 5 minutes in the morning, and that's also Mixas Yom Kekula. So the Shiva is really only 5 days with the Shabbos in the middle, which really only means 4 days, right? So it isn't an extensive amount of time, but on either end it's a mixas yom kekula, and then the avelim get up. Once they get up, they're entering into shloshim. They now left us as well. Then Eri says we need to walk around the block. When do we take the walk? So the truth is that the this is a much, much later day minag. It's not talked about in Shulchan Aruch whatsoever. It does reflect one aspect of halacha, which is that in halacha, the avel is not allowed to leave the house, right? They're not supposed to leave just on a whim. So this is, in a certain sense, the opposite of that. This is now the return to the public sphere. Person's back in the world. In another vein, psychologically, it's also in a certain sense a person's been protected. A person is allowed to just cry. A person's allowed to talk about one's parents. One's allowed to engage in this process. But when one goes out into the world, they don't care again, right? It's a very hard world out there, and the one, it's easier to, it's sometimes just to stay in a place where one is able to just process, but one's forced to go back out. That's so to speak. That after the shiva, one has to re-enter life. One has to re-enter the craziness of life. Another aspect of this is that the Sefer Tamei Menhagim describes that the neshama actually has multiple stations of its own journey. So between death and burial, is a state of great trauma for the neshama. And because there's a confusion as to where it's going. During the shiva, it's moving forward, but it's tethered backwards. So it's being pulled back to the place it used to be, which is why we sit in the base of El, which is where it used to be. At the end of the shiva, then it's released to the next step, which means to say that the end of the shiva is indicating a process of the neshama moving outwards, which is part of the levaya of walking out on the last day is this another level of escort to the shama being in a better stage. So that's another aspect of it. Should we just I'm just going to crunch through a little bit of shleshim, if that's all right, just because to get a little further, I want to sort of put this all together. So once the shiva ends, so that day is essentially the seventh day from the burial. Right now enters the shloshim. The shloshim is already 7 days in now, right? So the shloshim is 30 days. So just a few things about the shloshim. So greetings, technically speaking, the people should not, again, greet the avil shalom aleichem. They can say colloquially, hey, nice to see you. Those kind of, you know, good morning. Those are allowed, but shalom aleichem shouldn't be done. Mazel tov, shaking hands is allowed as well. Shabbos, you can say shalom aleichem on Shabbos, because Shabbos during the shloshim is different. What about business trips? So during the shloshim, the avil should really try to avoid any business trips as well. After the shloshim and during the Beis Chodesh, if one is pressured to go on a business trip, one can go as well. Vacations. So it depends what the kind of vacation. If there are vacations with friends that bring about simcha, one should avoid those during the shloshim and even during the year as well. But for a person who needs the space just to recuperate, with a family, that's absolutely appropriate and all right. I remember it becomes interesting, you know, in terms of making minyanim on vacation. So one has to rethink one's vacation schedule as to, is there going to be a minyan locally as well? But that's a separate kind of thing as well. Taking a shower. So I just want to point out that in the Ramah, the Sfaradim say absolutely, the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch says one's not allowed to shower 30 days. That practice of the Ramah has been discussed in the Noisei Kelim already in the Shulchan Aruch, as many disagree with this as well. And one is allowed to shower during the Shloshim as well, but it should not be pleasure bathing, right? So during the course of the Shloshim, it's more like the 9 days. It's functional. One can take warm showers, but it should be functional. One shouldn't be going to the spa. One shouldn't be, what I say is shower as therapy is to be avoided, right? Shower as cleanliness is fine as well. Freshly laundered clothes is also off the table. So that does not refer to big day zayah, anything, any undergarments. One can certainly wear those. But it's kind of like the 9 days in the sense that one wears one's wardrobe out. So one keeps just wearing the things that are there and manages to get through them as well. Well, the point is that it shouldn't be that you're going into a closet and there's, you know, the mentally dry cleaned garment that one feels really good on. One puts on that's going to wait till after shloshim. So one wants to avoid that feeling of, you know, on full cylinders as well. And if, let's say, a person runs out of clothing, I've not had this issue in the Five Towns so much, let's say a person runs out of clothing, one can have something else wear it like one would do for an hour in order to have the same speak of the 9 days. One doesn't feel, it does not as great, you know, when somebody else wears it as well. Haircuts. An avil may not have a haircut or for a man shave during the shloshim. And that has to wait until the end of the shloshim as well. That stays as well. Waxing or bodily hair shaving is allowed. It's hair cutting and facial hair cutting as well. Dyeing hair for women is allowed. Cutting nails remains out. This is a hard one. This is perhaps the hardest one of all it is, because nails grow fast and one really feels it. One can file it, one can bite it, but one can't clip it during the course of the shloshim. If, let's say, one is a neurosurgeon, right, and that's going to affect other people's lives in that way, one can certainly do it for that. But barring that, an accountant will manage, right? So one has to bear that in mind. Seat and shul. It is interesting. There's different practices about changing seats in shul. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch, Ashkenazim, the practice to change the seats. The Ramah says all 12 months, even on Shabbos, the Sfarim change the seat, but not on Shabbos. The Shabbos piece of it is actually a part which is somewhat debated. You'll see some people doing this or not. And that is really, it's in a certain sense, it's a little bit of an exile. One feels displaced. Right? One doesn't feel like one's in one's regular seat. One feels a little bit out of this world. Yes?
Could that avail us on Shabbos?
Good question. That's exactly why the Sfaradim avoid it. I'm not sure why the Ashkenazim allow it in that respect as well. Because you're right, that is the issue at stake. But the person's sort of a displaced. It should be like four amos from where one sat. One's not around one's immediate like a group of friends in the same way. One doesn't feel quite as comfortable. I'll call it maladjusted, is what a velus is supposed to be doing to a person. Yeah.
But people used to sit in the same seat in the whole week. Meaning
Yeah. But I think most people do as well. Most people are creatures of habit. So when a person comes to shul, they always gravitate towards the same seat. So if a person's not velus, a little bit away from that as well. When does the shloshim end? So shloshim ends on the morning of the 30th day. So just an easy way to remember this is, let's say the funeral was on a Sunday. Fast forward 4 weeks, one day, right? So it'll be Monday morning. Very easy to remember because that's 30 days, right? Sunday is day one, Monday is day 30 plus 4 weeks. Right, so we have Monday morning, and that's when the shloshim ends. Again, it's mitzvah siyam kakulai. So it'll be the part of the day is like the entire day in this regard as well. And so if one is making a shloshim meal, let's say it's during the summer, one could make it, let's say in that instance, on the Monday evening when it's still light. Or later on Sunday that it's going to go into dark on that Sunday night for the shloshim meal as well. If there's a yom tov falls during the shiva, then it cuts the shiva, but it also contracts the shiva. So it's like 7 days of the shloshim were taken. And then another 7 days because Yom Tov actually has the korban is brought in that Yom Tov. So depending on which Yom Tov cuts the Shiva, I just put down the dates of Iyar. So let's say Pesach cut the Shiva, the Shloshim will end on the 7th of Iyar. If Shavuos, it'll be the 22nd of Sivan coming up this week. There's a number of people who are in that situation right now. Rosh Hashanah will be the 9th of Tishrei because Yom Kippur will cut the Shloshim. If it's Yom Kippur, then it'll be the 4th of Tishrei because Shavuos will cut the Shloshim. And if Sukkot Shemini Atzeres, then it'll be the 1st of Cheshvan. I'm not going to go through the specifics of each number, but this is what will happen if a person does this as well. And towards somebody asked this question just a moment ago: is laundry is allowed from midday? Bathing, changing clothing, and leather shoes are allowed from Plag HaMincha as well for a person who's in the state of shiva. What about if the shloshim falls during the yom tov falls during the shloshim, not the shiva? So let's say a person finishes their shiva before yom tov, shloshim hits in the middle. The yom tov hits in the middle of shloshim. So for most people that ends the shloshim, right, as well, except for a child. For a child mourning a parent, then the hair cutting remains in place and the chiyuv of the amud remains in place. Those two kind of carry over. But in terms of setting a date for, let's say, the siyam mishnayas and getting the family to get together, then technically speaking, one waits till the full shloshim because the yom tov just cuts what's called the nihugei avelos, the practices, but it doesn't cut the journey of the soul. The soul is still going through that 30-day period, and so therefore the siyam can be set as such as well. The hardest question that in avelos is why is it that for a spouse, for a rachman litzlan, for a child, rachman litzlan, a sibling, why is there no 12 months? Right, that's the hardest question, and the answer is because it's the other way around. The question should be asked the other way around, which is why is it that a child has 12 months? Because stam avelos is 30 days. Avelos is a 30-day period. The children, as a function of the kibud avaim, which continues past death, have a responsibility. We'll call it a quasi kibud avaim, quasi avelos halachos, which continue for 11 months beyond the 30 days. But they're the anomaly, not the other way around. So that's how it plays itself out as well. So some of these things are things obviously which apply during the shloshim. I'm going to try to just wrap up quickly over here, and that is what's called simchas mereos, which means meals with friends. So if there's like a bar mitzvah, an ofrif, a luncheon, a birthday party, all these kind of things where there's friends and food, an avil can't really take a seat at that. It's like kind of like COVID. It's like, you know, go in, wish mazel tov, take food, go out, listen to the speeches, leave, right? So one can go to the bris, one can go to the ofrif, one can pop in at the shev brachos, wish mazel tov, but one can't take a seat at these things. If it's family, not friends, and it's on Shabbos, then it's different, right? So I mean, say, like, let's say it's one's nephew, one's niece just got married, it's a Shabbos Sheva Brachos, and you aren't there, and you're on good terms with them, they'll all say, oh, it's because, then that's Avelos B'Faresi on Shabbos, right? But like for a friend, it's not always so obvious. It's not always so obvious because you're not always there for all the friends Sheva Brachos as well. If it's a bosom friend who you grew up with and you would never miss any of the simchas and you're absent, there's room to say that it's Avelos B'Faresi, but you need to be honest with yourself. Because in terms of this, I was actually chatting with Rabbi Rolbag because we were at a shared shiva recently, and I was saying I think that people are sometimes a little bit more loose about this. They say, you know, if I wasn't there, the whole world would know, and I'm not really sure that's the case. He said it's the opposite. He thinks people are too machmir, right? He thinks that people, he says, we should be more mekel. Most people don't go to things that they should go to on Shabbos because their absence would be mitted. So one has to really do an analysis as to what this is as well. I'm giving an avil a gift. One cannot give avelim gifts except on Shabbos. So let's say for Shabbos meal as well, but one shouldn't be giving a gift. That's part of what's called She'elas Shalom as well. And wearing new clothes, whether they're bought before or bought now, one cannot do. This is something which is shechianable. So I mean, we're not talking about new socks, right? We're talking about a new dress, a new suit, a new tie, a new piece of jewelry that makes one feel really great. One's not really feeling great. And that's what's happening over here. Fancy clothing is actually technically not allowed during Avelos, so maybe on Shabbos. So one has to be careful about this. Big day Shabbos. Listening to music. So if it is for pleasure, one's not allowed to. If it's incidental, it's allowed. So for instance, I'm in a store, I'm watching a documentary, there's music in the background, I don't have to run out or stop. But if it's for pleasure, one's not allowed to. For Parnassa, one can. Because let's say one plays a keyboard at weddings, you know, one has to bring home the dough. That's all right. But also, this includes recorded music. So I say to people, is find a good podcast, find a good share, have a new default for driving. If one's driving dead of night and it's like, you know, and it's been a 13-hour drive, one's in the middle of, you know, upstate New York, and one has run out of gum, right? And one can't call anybody, and one needs music. Don't be stupid, but like put on the music. But there's a lot of other alternatives first. But it is important in the mental health space that people, let's say, who live alone or need the music, not to move from neutral to positive, but negative to neutral, right? So then that's fine, because that's a mental health piece of it. Yeah, that's not pleasure. That's and in many circumstances that may be fine as well. About in terms of simchas, so I put a whole list over here of the different things: brises, pidyon habens, kiddushes, bar mitzvahs, weddings, Shavuot brachos, siyums, concerts, Shabbos meals, standing kiddushes, and so on. So just a few quick points without going through all the details. But standing kiddushes, generally speaking, is fine. It's not a sit down meal. If one is making it one's meal, then perhaps one should avoid that. But a standing kiddush, to stand on the side and take something is fine. Shabbos meal invitations. So an avel. So during the shloshim, one should avoid Shabbos meals. But let's say during the week, we have like neighbors, and we always like, you know, we're in each other's houses and things like that. That's fine, but it shouldn't be a kind of thing where it's unusual, or one takes time to plan. If one's making place cards, who sits next to who, right? And then it becomes a thing. That's the kind of thing one needs to avoid as well. Concerts obviously should not be attended. Siyums are allowed to be attended after the shloshim as well. So if one's going to a siyum, that's considered a siras mitzvah as well. Shavuot brachos and others should not attend as well, unless it's for family family on Shabbos after the shloshim. Weddings are just more complicated because a wedding is the epitome of simcha. So an avel can go in. Let's not talk about family. Family, if it's a child or grandchild, one is allowed to go to that wedding. Aunt, uncles, not so simple. But let's say it's somebody who's not direct line of paternal, maternal direct line, and there's a wedding. One can go to the chassan's tish, to Ishmael's. One can even pop in at the bedekin, although very quickly, because the bedekin is a lot of food and music, which is not the way it used to be, but it's like a whole party there usually now. One can attend the chuppah even though they're blaring music, definitely. One isn't going to the chuppah to hear that music. One is going to attend this, but once the dancing starts in, one should leave. One can't enter the hall. This whole thing about a job, just by the way, I know like people are like, well, give them a job. The job only does one thing. And if it's a job which is actually a continual job, not just taking one picture, but actually, you know, going around and filling up glasses or taking pictures that are going to be for the Shavuot, that's fine, but that doesn't allow one to dance, and that doesn't allow one to take a seat. That just allows one to be in the hall, right? That's all it does. One still has to eat outside, just in terms of the way it's brought in halacha. I know sometimes it's misconstrued sometimes as well. For bar mitzvahs, a person, an avel, is allowed to attend a boy by young bar mitzvah, and certainly if there is a Devar Torah which is being given for the boy as well. And pidyon habens and brises, one can go and one can wish mazel tov, but one can't sit down and have that sort of as well. And you know, just a few last points in terms of dating and timing. What happens if there's a leap year, which we just had this year? So what happens is, if there's a leap year, then for a child, there's going to be three dates which are important in terms of the avelos. So there's going to be 11 months for Kaddish, right? That ends at 11 months. There's going to be 12 months for avelos, and then there's going to be 13 months for the yahrzeit. So there's going to be three separate dates of what we call staggered ending, right? Of the different stages. And so that sometimes it's helpful because it actually allows different stages to happen. Usually on a regular year, the avelos and the yahrzeit will converge, right? Because the usual way it works is if there's a patira, the funeral is usually not able to be the same day just because of the way that things need to work. It's a bracha if it is, but usually it's not. It's usually the next day, which means our velos starts one day later, which means it ends on the day of the yahrzeit, right? Because that'll be the full year on the yahrzeit itself. So you have those two converging in the yud aleph chodesh of Kaddish 1 month earlier. Just in terms of one structural point of this, and then we'll conclude for today. and that is in terms of why the year is structured as it is. And there's a lot of chachma which is given to this. Part of it is like this: is if we as regular human beings were given the license to map out our own year. So let's say there was no halacha, free to process grief in our own way. What would end up happening? So we'd struggle, because here's the deal. On the one hand, we have the value is, how could one pick up and continue when somebody so important is missing, is absent? It's like, it's not appropriate, right? Certainly a parent, right? Parents and whatever else went on, they brought you into this world, right? So that's a very, very significant thing, and it'd be completely callous to continue life as normal when they pass away. On the other hand, one needs to. One has a business, one has a family, there's a lot of things that one needs to do. So let's say there was no halacha, there was no system. So what would happen is, if we'd left to map this out ourselves, without ritual, without space, then we'd say, okay, so one day we get like really, really busy, and we like just like to distract ourselves. The next day, we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning, right? And we just like, we'd oscillate between grief and apathy, right? Paralysis and indifference. And so what the Chazal did was, they said, we're going to structure it for you. We'll take that, the burden of decision-making off you, and we're going to make it like this, is that for the first 7 days, complete, absolute lack of self-focus. One's not taking care of oneself. One doesn't feel cared for, because one's focusing on the one who passed away. Then at the end of that, then it returns a little bit into regular life, but in the return to regular life, there's still reminders, vestigial reminders during the Shloshim, that one is not back to regular life. And then comes the remainder of the 12 months. There's still, for children, kind of these hangovers which remind us that we're not really fully back to life as well. So in a certain sense, it's like a decompression chamber, right? It's like bringing one back to life in this way, but with the reminders that it's not absolutely normal yet. That being the case, it's just important to appreciate this. It doesn't mean that the emotions match Avelis, right? So it's not like after the Shiva I feel better, but rather it's actually that after the Shiva I don't have to think, did I do enough? Because Chazal helped us make that decision, and that helps inform the way our language works. Is when I'm not going to your Sheva Brachas, it's not because I don't care about you. It's because I got onto this program, this train, which has certain rules, and I'm going to continue on that program. Because that's what I've been told. In this case, it pulls away the decision making as from oneself as well. And when Chazal did this, they didn't do this randomly just because 7 is a nice Jewish number and 30 usually happens in Judaism. It's actually, they're mapping it out of the specific way stations of the soul. So the soul itself is, at the beginning of the process of Elus, is undergoing more intense trauma. There's more intense trauma at the beginning after death, and slowly over the time of the year, there's a remittance where it finds more menucha, and therefore the Averus is patterned after that for those who are left behind as well, matching that de-intensification process as well. This is in terms of just sort of the little bit of the why of the halacha. We covered a huge amount of in a very short time today. What we're going to do next time, this will be a capstone of this whole thing, is getting to the Yartzan and Akamas Matseva, and sort of understanding how this is the meaningfulness of this entire process. Thank you so much for taking.